This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening to you for Wednesday, January 16th, 2013. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly. I'm so glad you could join us. And of course, I am here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Doug. Good evening, everybody. Good to be back. Still January.
Still.
We're still here.
Oh, yeah.
I thought maybe there was a delay in some kind of end of world, you know.
Oh.
But we're still here.
No, I think we're probably safe till the next one, whenever that is.
They'll announce it, I'm sure.
I'm sure they will. So
yeah, good to be here.
Yes, we welcome everybody listening to us live, listening to the archive. Glad you could join us. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly radio program, MCHS Church also operates the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, a metaphysics school offering bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysics with a number of different specializations available. And we also just recently launched our new auxiliary of Metaphysics Institute, known as newageclass.com, where you can take certificate and certification courses there. So if you'd like more information about either of these, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org or newageclass.com. All right, before we get into our topic tonight, we're going to do our profession of beliefs, and Dr. Vicki's going to do that tonight.
Well, our profession of beliefs, there are nine principles. The spiritual philosophy of MCH Church is based upon these nine principles of belief, which are, number one, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and giving and living by the principle do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. Number two, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. Number three, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. Number four, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are, therefore, equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. Number five, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Sorry, I've got a little delay in my blog talk radio, Doug. I apologize.
No problem.
Number six, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both a physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. Number seven, we believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these three synergistically create the goal of self-completeness. Number eight, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. Number nine, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So for more information on these principles of belief as well as MCHS Church, please visit mchschurch.org. See, it was not my best night for reading, Doug.
But you got through it, and I appreciate that. And it's good, you know. Welcome to life. And that's kind of our topic tonight. We're going to be talking about empathy, compassion, and non-judgment. We're going to get into a little bit into paying it forward. We're going to talk about mercy, different things like that. Just wanted to say that if you're listening to us live and you have a comment or anything, you're more than welcome to call in. Dr. John Hightower, of course, is manning the phones. And if you want to ask a question or make a statement in the chat room, you can do that as well. So tonight, we're going to basically have a nice discussion on empathy, compassion, and non-judgment. And if you don't like it, then you're no good. I'm just kidding.
What a great way to start a show.
Yeah. No hypocrites around here. Yeah. Okay, so, and we'll talk a little bit about righteous indignation, too, because it all kind of fits in. The thing is to kind of set the tone for this program is that, you know, we get so caught up in life, and there's such a competitive spirit out there. You know, we got to get ahead. We got to get ours before they get theirs, or we may not get any, that kind of a thing. And so we come face to face with situations every day where perhaps we could be a little more aware, a little more self-aware, a little more aware of the plight of others as well, where we don't have to be so, spend so much energy on just getting our chunk, you know, and not to say that we don't deserve it and we don't get it, but basically that competitive, you know, I got to get mine before you get yours, or I got to get mine before, or I may not ever get it, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's been well stated by many others that there's plenty to go around here. And so what are some of the ways that we can be more empathetic, more compassionate, and more non-judgmental in life?
Maybe we should define what is empathy, Doug. A lot of people don't understand what that means, truly.
Fire away. You got my definition, but you probably got yours.
Well, my view is empathy is connecting in how we all feel the same. You know, sometimes we assume what other people think or feel, which is not healthy. But the empathy of imagine what that must feel like to connect at that human level, that humanity, the emotional. And it's about, I believe, you know, with some kind of dignity too, you know, that there's some things I cannot be empathetic about, Doug, but I can and will go on with this, then reach deep inside myself to find some compassion. For instance, when somebody, you know, loses a child, that is one thing I cannot be empathetic with because I can't relate to it, and I hope I never do. You know, but I can feel, and sure, I can still connect with somebody. So I think empathy is being able to connect and hopefully connect in ways that we're much alike. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, that's what empathy is. It's basically putting yourself in the other person's shoes. And there is a difference between empathy and sympathy. Just as you stated, you cannot empathize with somebody who has lost a child, but you can certainly sympathize with them. In other words, you can't put yourself in their shoes because you've never been in that situation. But you can certainly have compassion and sympathy for a person like that, you know, in that particular situation. So there's your definition of empathy, putting yourself in the other person's shoes. I mean, don't we like it when other people do that for us? They put themselves in our shoes. They give us the benefit of the doubt. You know, there are times, folks, when we screw up, we make mistakes, and it can appear like, wow, you know, I'll give you an example. It just happened today. I mean, with the courses, I have a new student, and there were, I put this new orientation course together for Metaphysics Institute last month, and I wanted to get it going. I made some procedural changes, and I wanted to get that off and going. So I put it together, and I probably did it a little bit too fast, probably didn't finalize the proofing or the reading like I should have, just to make sure everything was there. Well, there was a couple of areas in the exam that were not really covered by the material, and yet I asked questions on it. So I have a new student, and it's like he's the one that discovered all of the things that I needed to correct in it. It's not like several students discovered it. It's just one student discovered it. So it's like, oh, great. You know, here's this incompetent here putting a course together, and you know it's not the case, but it could have looked that way. So the point is that stuff just happens at times. I mean, it can give an impression, but we can't always trust that impression is the correct impression. So it's always best to give the benefit of the doubt, err on the side of mercy, which we'll get into a little bit later, err on the side of giving them the benefit of the doubt. You know, my policy is I'll give you the benefit of the doubt until I have a reason not to. And it doesn't mean you have to be stupid or not look at red flags, but basically, are you giving people the benefit of the doubt? If you get an email, and there's so many instances of this, these emails that come through that can be rather direct, perhaps abrupt, you know, that you don't have the benefit of the vocal intonation, you don't have the benefit of body language, all you got is words. And it may sound mean, it may sound direct, it may sound whatever. My advice, always give the benefit of the doubt on those emails unless it's very clear that it's not what it was meant to be. But we have the same thing. I mean, I've written emails before and had no malintent or anything, and they were misinterpreted. So I looked at the way I wrote it, and I learned from that. I tried to change the tone a little bit. So that's the whole point of this, and I've got a lot of material here. I'm just going to start with and kind of do a progression here of some of the different points I wanted to cover in this program tonight. And I'm going to start with paying it forward. We've talked about this before. You know, back in the year 2000, author Catherine Ryan Hyde released her book Pay It Forward. It wasn't too much long after that a movie was made by the same name, starring Kevin Spacey and Helen Hunt and Haley Joe Osment, I guess is how you pronounce it. I love that movie. I mean, it's such an incredible concept. And that was really my first exposure to the concept of paying it forward. And I love that concept in the book and in the movie where, you know, if somebody does something nice for you, you do it nice for three other people. It's kind of the multi-level marketing of paying it forward. And it's such an incredible concept. Just think of the potential that has for changing our planet for the better. So with the concept of paying it forward, you know, you do a nice for somebody, and then they go do a nice for somebody else. So if somebody does something nice for you, you go do a nice for somebody else. Of course, you don't have to wait for somebody else to do it, but that's the concept of paying it forward. Now, I want to kind of bridge and bring in to this discussion the idea of mercy. Now, we hear about mercy a lot of times with religions and that kind of thing. But I really want to talk about true mercy and showing true mercy to others. You know, kind of an interesting story, kind of a funny headline, funny but sad. This is something I clipped out of the Rapid City Journal, Rapid City, South Dakota, back in 1995, October 12th. There was an article. The title of this article was Anger Management Counselor Beats Client.
Sorry. Whoops.
Yeah, I know. No kidding. Whoops. So obviously this counselor got annoyed with his client to the point of losing control. And we think about that and we think, wow, who was pushing his buttons? Well, what about mercy? You know, what about that thing? And of course, we all know that we don't have to get that annoyed with people. I mean, we don't have to let people annoy us. We don't have to be around people that annoy us, that kind of thing. We talked about that a lot of times on this program. But this concept of mercy, without question, is a profound topic. And it's something that we should all consider. It touches on everything we do, from business to religion. And I've got to say, if free will is the foundation cornerstone of life, then mercy is the mortar that holds it together. You just really can't have free will without mercy and respect for others and vice versa. And a lot of people really don't pay a whole lot of attention to mercy. Probably very few really understand what it is. And if you look at the dictionary defines mercy as compassion or forbearance shown especially to an offender or to one subject. I got to read that again. Compassion or fair or forbearance shown especially to an offender or to one subject to one's power. In other words, this is describing passive mercy. If somebody does something, offends you, or does something against a person, and the other person then forgives them, that's being merciful. But that's a passive mercy. In other words, something, some mistake or some error has to be done in order for it to be shown. I want to talk more about an active type of mercy. This is an expression of, well, mercy, compassion that we offer to others, even though no wrong deed has been committed. It's just something that we see. And this can take the form of so many different things. I'll read a story here from American orator Robert G. Ingersoll. He was a 19th century free thinker, and he recorded the touching story of a passive mercy displayed to a woman and her husband. Now, this is passive mercy, but it's interesting how it can kind of even morph into active. I'll just read his little passage here. He said, one day, a woman accompanied by a senator called on President Lincoln. Now, this was back in, of course, just after the Civil War. The woman was the wife of one of Mosby's men. John Mosby was a guerrilla leader in the South during the time of the Civil War. Her husband had been captured, tried, and condemned to be shot. She came to ask for the pardon of her husband. The president heard her story and then asked what kind of man her husband was. Is he intemperate? Does he abuse the children and beat you? No, no, said the wife. He's a good man, a good husband. He loves me and he loves the children, and we cannot live without him. The only trouble is that he's a fool about politics. I live here in the North, born there, and if I get him home, he will do no more fighting for the South. Well, said Mr. Lincoln, after examining the papers, I will pardon your husband and turn him over to you for safekeeping. The poor woman, overcome with joy, sobbed as though her heart would break. My dear woman, said Lincoln, if I'd known how badly it was going to make you feel, I would have never pardoned him. You do not understand me, she cried between her sobs. You do not understand me. Yes, yes, I do, answered the president, and if you do not go away at once, I shall be crying with you. And then Ingersoll makes the comment, it is the glory of Lincoln that having almost absolute power, he never abused it except on the side of mercy. So if the worst thing you can say about Lincoln is, you know, he was too merciful. Wow, that's a pretty tough thing there. So that's an example of passive mercy, but also kind of morphing and getting close to active mercy. Well, let's talk about what active mercy is, because it's the same thing pretty much as paying it forward. There are a couple of other definitions on mercy. One is compassionate treatment of those in distress, and that's really the active type that we're going to talk about here. True mercy in its highest form is an active quality and should be extended in an active fashion. We need to look for ways to show mercy to other people. Now, for active mercy to occur, and this is the same thing as paying it forward, for active mercy to occur, to take place, three criteria or conditions must be present. There must be a need, that's the first one. There must be a feeling of compassion, that's the second one. And three, there must be action, because mercy is compassion in action. I'll repeat those. Number one, there must be a need. Number two, there must be a feeling of compassion. And number three, there must be action. A lot of times, folks, we see a need, don't we? And we might even feel compassion. We see a need on the part of somebody. We might feel a tug at our heart. But do we act? Because if we don't act, nothing gets done. It requires action. So think about these three conditions, these three criteria. Here's another little story tidbit. It's stories told of a little English boy's encounter with an American GI during World War II. London had been repeatedly bombed by the German Luftwaffe, I guess it is. It's Hitler's Air Force. That's easier to say than Luftwaffe. Hitler's Air Force. And parts of the city were in shambles. Food was scarce. The American soldier had just purchased a dozen donuts from a local bakery when he noticed a poorly clothed and desperately hungry boy. After the American soldier offered him his donuts, the boy looked up at him and said, "Mister, are you God?" Well, this soldier obviously saw a need, had a feeling of compassion, and then acted on it. And we can see these criteria all over the place. They have to happen in order for any kindness to be shown, really. And so, as we take a pause here, how are you doing in this area? Are you looking for things? Do you act on those feelings when you have them to help somebody, to lighten somebody's load a little bit? I'm looking across my notes here. I know we've all had experiences where we've helped folks out, and that's good. I mean, we all have them, and that's great. How can we enhance that a little bit?
You know, I think part of what we have to do, Doug, is rid ourselves of our prejudices to do that, to be honest. I think a lot of time our preconceived notions of people, circumstance, situations prevents us from participating in action. You know, whether it's, it's like some kid, you know, playing his guitar on the side of the street. You know, people don't give money. I mean, I try to throw him a quarter, and the worst thing is going in the store for change, coming back, and he's already gone. I hate that. But it's the preconceived notions that prevent us, I think, you know, from having that kindness, showing kindness, extending that kindness to others. And that's a big discussion all on its own, because we're prejudiced in ways we don't even know. And it's about changing thinking to see us as one humanity rather than, you know, some kind of segregated groups.
And, right.
And I know we are segregated groups. I mean, that is a reality. And we're living it. But the only way for it to change is to change our thinking about it and recognize where we are flawed in our behaviors. And that is showing mercy to yourself, I think. Don't you?
I agree. And that's the point, is this connection that we have, because we're all one. I mean, we're all from the same stuff. Everything, you look around you, everything you see all came from the same place. Doesn't matter whether you're human or animal or rock or diamond or gold or whatever. We all came from the stuff of stars. I mean, everything's stardust. And so when we look at each other, do we feel the plight of others? Do we empathize with them? You know, again, it goes back to not being so self-absorbed, not being only in it for ourselves, but to help others. I mean, there's so many examples. For example, you're in traffic and somebody wants to get out into the lane and traffic's heavy. Do you let them go? A lot of people do. That's great. A lot of people don't. Can you just let somebody go? Just say yes. You go. Because think about if you think about yourself, you're switch the roles. You're in that situation. You need to get out into traffic, and nobody will let you go. You know, it's that empathy. Put yourself in their shoes. What would it be like? What would you be saying if it was you in their position? Would you be looking for a little bit of a break? You know, it's good and well to help lighten the load of others, and we can do that with a smile. We can do that with a good word. It's like a gift, you know, an encouraging word. And as I've said many times, one of the biggest things people need, one of the most important things people need, is just a word of encouragement. The world can get people down. Life can get you down. The stressors and stuff, I mean, the financial problems that the world's having, you know, it can get to you. Isn't it nice when you just get an encouraging word, something that's a little bit uplifting, a little positive, and that's really what we're talking about.
I think what everybody wants is a little validation.
Yeah.
I find that, you know, this is psychology 101, but very often in mediating people, relationships of any kind, the first and foremost thing you do is validate what somebody's just said. Like, you hear them. It doesn't mean you agree. It just means that you have heard it. And this is where the paraphrasing, you know, is really helpful, to be honest. You know, it's like, wait a minute, did I hear that? Because the way I'm translating that is blah, blah, blah. And then it gives somebody an opportunity to explain. And that way we're all learning about communication. You know, so it's really about being heard. Somebody just wants to be acknowledged, recognized, validated. You know, if you just blow me off, well, it doesn't make me feel very good, you know. And so it's that, just that sometimes it's a smile, sometimes it's a nod, sometimes it can be the simplest little thing that can validate somebody in a day, not just in dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Well put. So as we talk about this, just as a reminder, as just kind of a summation of this point, as you go about your day, look for those three things, you know, look for a need, have a feeling of compassion, and then take action. And, you know, you'll feel better for it, too. It's like the paying it forward thing is that people feel better. You know, if you want to lift up your spirits, go do something nice, you know, for somebody else, because it will lift your spirits.
Can I also add something in there, too, Doug? When we're facing criticism, negativity, adversity, prejudice, racism, any number of negatives, it does no good to fight back in the same negative.
Mm-hmm.
It's and this is where everything that you've just been saying really comes into play. You know, the best way, as you said before, to kill any communication or any relationship is just not talk. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes if you just let somebody with all that negativity, they're spewing all this anger and they're just, you know, it's just to wait it out. Let them release it. Say nothing. Stay still. Don't take it on. Because the worst thing we can do is get into a big argument that just fuels, you know, the negativity. But come at it from a different place of sensing your way through it and thinking and picking your spots. And that's not to say we can't defend ourselves, but defend ourselves in a way that is, number one, very more truthful, because it comes from inside the self, not just from your head and your anger and emotions and issues and concerns, but more that is from that knowledge place. Like, it's universal as opposed to just some kind of opinion. And yet I know everybody's got opinions. But, you know, when you're facing really bad crap, just stay still.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of falls in line with, you know, react or respond, don't react.
Yeah.
Now, is there a difference between responding and reacting? Of course there is. When we react, it's, you know, knee-jerk reaction. It's without really thinking. It's fight or flight. And very seldom do we ever have to react to something. We can respond instead. And that's where we think first. It's like, and I've used this analogy before, it's like when somebody tosses a ball at you, we instinctively catch it. We just raise our arms and we catch it. We never let it just bounce off. Well, when people are saying things that are not very nice, it's like they're throwing a ball at you. They're hurling something at you. Well, you don't have to catch it, because when we catch it, we take ownership of it. We don't have to own that. You can let it bounce off and say, it's not my stuff, it's your stuff. And so we don't have to invest in it emotionally and get all upset. And that's another way of being honestly compassionate with others, being merciful, is to not get upset at that stuff, not take ourselves too seriously, not take others too seriously. You know what I mean? Just let it bounce off. If it's a lot of people vent and they'll say things that they don't really mean, they just getting things off their chest. And they don't mean it like it's coming out. Well, give them the benefit of the doubt, because we've all been there. That's the point I keep trying to make. We have all been there. We do this. We're all the same. We all make blunders. We all make mistakes. And we look back and say, oh, my Lord, how in the world did I even, how did I do that? I know better than that. Why did I do that? Why did I make that decision? It was stupid. I know better. And yet we still do. Why? Well, it's real simple. We're human. That's who we are, what we do. We make mistakes. We need to learn from them. Always learn from them. And as we look at people, we have to understand, and I was trying to say this earlier, that things are not always what they seem. We may have an impression, but that impression may not be accurate. Here's a a little story I heard some years ago that kind of makes the point. The story goes, let me see where that begins. It's about two traveling angels. And they had stopped to spend the night in the house of a wealthy family. The family was rude and refused to let the angels stay in the guest house. Instead, they were given a small space in the cold basement of the mansion. Well, as they made their bed on the hard floor, the older angel saw a hole in the wall and he repaired it. When the younger angel asked why, the older angel replied, "Things aren't always what they seem." The next night, the pair came to rest at the house of a very poor but hospitable farmer and his wife. After sharing what little food they had, the couple let the angel sleep in their own bed where they could have a good night's rest. When the sun came up in the morning the next day, the angels found the farmer and his wife in tears. Their only cow, whose milk had been their sole means of income, lay dead in the field. The younger angel was infuriated and asked the older angel, "How could you let this happen? The first man had everything, yet you helped him. The second family had nothing, had very little, but was willing to share everything with us, and you let their cow die." The older angel replied, "Things aren't always what they seem. When we stayed in the basement of the mansion, I noticed that there was gold in that hole in the wall. Since the owner was so obsessed with greed and unwilling to share his good fortune, I sealed the wall so he wouldn't find it. Then last night, as we slept in the farmer's bed, the angel of death came for his wife. I gave him the cow instead. Things aren't always what they seem." And so this story kind of illustrates that things aren't always what they seem with us, with other people. So rather than rush to judgment, the best one I got to come up with. You know, rather than do that, give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, if it's something that we can ask them about, then do so. If it's not one of those things we can ask them about, then just let it go. Because it doesn't matter to us. You know, don't let anything intrude in on your own peace. Even if somebody does something to you, it's not your stuff, it's their stuff. It happens. People can get upset with you for reasons that have nothing to do with you. So just remember, things aren't always what they seem. Give them the benefit of the doubt. You can always afford to give the benefit of the doubt at least once, if not many times. You remember that old expression, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me." We can always afford to extend mercy at least once, at least, if not
many
times.
And then you do it three times. Oh, my God. need therapy.
Yeah. Well, and again, I'm not saying anything close to, just accept what people do. Don't complain. You know, just take it. No, it's not what we're saying here. I'm saying that give the benefit of the doubt until there's a reason not to. And if there's a good reason not to, then don't. And sometimes that means the relationship's over with. But that's the way it is. You know, you can't make people do things. You can't make them behave in a particular way. And if they take advantage and they're unkind and that's their habit, then you're not in a relationship with them. It's real simple.
You know,
go ahead.
One of the things that I remind myself of repeatedly is, and I just do it unconsciously now, but I decide how love is going to act. You know, I decide how I want that to manifest. I decide, you know, by my own behavior, you know, how love is going to manifest itself. And love is conditional down here. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Life on Earth is a set of conditions. We interact and we decide things. And you can't say, and on one hand, that, you know, acting out, you know, is in a negative way is bad and a choice, unless you can equally say, you know, love is good and is how it acts is a choice. It's the same, equal and opposite. Universal love is unconditional. Spiritual love is unconditional. and I believe that very many levels there are no conditions like we know on Earth. But we decide how love will behave. You know, and very often we're looking at things that when people say, oh, I love you, but their behavior does not support that. We each have to decide what we're going to interact with, how we're going to interact with people's ideas and notions about love. You know, it's and it all goes with showing mercy and kindness and empathy. You know, it, that's just not acting in a loving way. Loving is not passive, by the way, certainly not in my view. I think sometimes we have to do things we don't like in order to teach better about love. You know, but again, love being the circumstances of living in a physical body on a conditional place of Earth. We have conditions. So there is such a thing as tough love, and, you know, it's sometimes it's for the benefit of all. You know, you have to make tough decisions. But it doesn't mean it has to happen in a bad way.
Right.
So, you know, just to reinforce that, and repeatedly in a day I'm talking to people about how do you want love to act? And people have never thought of it that way. So I would just propose that, you know, as we're talking in this program, is people can ask themselves, how do I want love to act? And how do I want people to treat me in this so-called idea of love?
Good.
And, you know, and you can take it very many layers, but how will love act?
That's good. So we're taking control of it. You know, another quote I want to share with everybody, this has been for a long time, been one of my favorite quotes. It's by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and he very eloquently expressed the true spirit of mercy and compassion when he wrote, "If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility." When you really take a deep look at people, why do people behave the way they do? Well, that's human nature, right? But think about it. Why do people act the way they act? I mean, we see adults who act like kids. You know, what are we, in high school? That kind of a thing. And yet, why? What is it about people that causes them to act the way they do? Well, there's a myriad reasons. Self-awareness or lack thereof is a big one. But we must remember that we are all doing the best we can at this moment with the experience, the knowledge, the tools that we've gained so far, that we have available to us at this moment, generally speaking. Doesn't mean that, it's not an excuse or anything, by the way. It's just we're doing our best. I mean, very, very few people on this planet really scheme against other people. They're sociopaths, psychopaths. Very few people even do that. Most of us are just trying to do the best we can with what we have to work with right here and now. And some folks don't know that they don't know. Some folks do know that they don't know, and they're trying. And so if nothing else, be one of those folks. Hey, I don't know at all, and I'm still trying to learn. And so we raise that level of self-awareness. And when we have a problem with somebody, an issue with somebody, we remember those words of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. We all have our story, folks.
Yep, everybody's got a story.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the most unlikely places, that, again, we're back to, you know, our prejudices about things that, it's usually because we're afraid. You know, we're afraid of just seeing the humanity of people, whether it's homeless on the street, you know, or somebody who's a bully.
Mm-hmm.
And everything in between, everybody's got a story. Everybody's got their own motivation, their own agendas. And some people are, let's say, in better positions to yield power, but they still have a story. And it's always the key, if you're interested, is ask the questions to find out their story. You know, my kids, they laugh at me because whenever we're out, it's all kinds of folks, including street people, just tend to talk to me. And, you know, it's just, I'm chilling, I'm good, and I find out all kinds of things about people. In fact, one story comes to mind. We were all going in this little restaurant to, my kids were visiting, we're all in the city, and I found a restaurant to go in to have some pizza, And before going in, there's this fellow who comes up and we strike up a conversation, and he's pretty old and his clothes are pretty tattered, and I found out that he used to be a bush pilot way up in the Northwest Territories, you know.
Wow.
And he had told me about we talked for about 15 minutes. And, of course, people waiting. They went in the restaurant. And I said, you know, I got to go have some supper. I said, are you hungry? Nope, I'm good. And it turns out that we likely know a lot of the same people from different areas. And it was a wonderful conversation. Well, about 20 minutes after I'd said my goodbyes to him, sitting down waiting for the pizza, and here it was coming, well, lo and behold, he comes in the restaurant. Everybody went quiet. All these heads turned, and he came right over to the table. So I said, hey, how you doing? And, of course, my kids are like, Mom, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. People. And, you know, the waitresses want to throw the guy out. And I said, so what's up? Like, did you change your mind about some pizza? No, but I think I know who you're talking about when you told that other story. And he was so excited that he had a memory and that we knew we had somebody in common. So I said, can I send some pizza with you? Nope, just wanted to say hi. I said, well, thanks very much, and off he went. And to me, that was a wonderful exchange. It was a wonderful human interaction. And I don't come from that place of fear. I come from that place of, you know, that quiet and the connection. And when you do, by the way, I'd like to tell everybody, when you know who you are, and you know why you are who you are, and you have a good, you know, sense of yourself, if there's any reason to be afraid, your feelers will go up and off, and you'll get little red lights going off in your head in no time, because you don't come from fear. So if there's a reason to be fearful, your instincts, your intuition will kick in immediately. I've been in situations, Doug, where I know I should just cross the street. Mm-hmm. Like, whoa, I think I got to go. But for the most part, there is just that interaction, that exchange in the most unlikely places, because everybody has a wonderful story to tell. I really believe that. I love hearing people's stories. I'm interested. So that takes us to the next, you know, kind of part of this conversation and the next level is how interested are we in each other?
Good point. That's where I wanted to go to. You know, yeah. It's like, here's an interesting thing, okay? You know, when you meet somebody new, take note now. When you meet somebody, what do you talk about? Do they ask you about you? Do we just talk about us? Oh, yeah, I've done this and I've done this and I've been here and I've been there. Is it about us? Is that what we're talking about? Or are we asking, you know, who are you and what's your story? That's what I always want to know. Who are you and what's your story? And I ask them, you know, where are you from? All those questions. What do you do? How long have you been doing that? And you don't strike up a conversation. Focus on them. And if they're enlightened enough, they'll focus on you too. Well, enough about me. How about you? Where are you from? And all that sort of a thing. And then you get to know each other. But it's interesting how many people just want to talk about themselves because that's their favorite subject, right? So if that's their favorite subject, why not talk to them about themselves? Ask questions. And get to know people. You know, I've met several people. You know, some of the boys or a couple of the boys' girlfriends and so forth, you know, come and go. And I meet them, other people I meet. And it's, I always know it. I always ask them, you know, who are you? What do you do? And not exactly that way, but I want to find out and see what their story is. And, you know, nobody ever asked me, well, Doug, what do you do? You know, what do you got going on? They don't even ask. It's so interesting to me. And I think, wow, man, you're missing out a lot because there's a lot of cool stuff I do and I've done. And I'll bet you'd find it interesting, but you're not even asking.
Oh, my kids, they would just worry like crazy to introduce their friends to me because I always would interrogate them. Because I'm interested. And it's not an interrogation except that there's an interest and to have an exchange. But, you know, when it came to the boyfriends and girlfriends, it's like, oh, yeah, Mom the warrior. But you know, it's people are not used to, you know, having somebody interested in them. But then when they do, they're usually on a roll and then they forget the other way. And I think that goes back to a lot of people don't feel validated, Doug, to be honest. And when somebody actually is interested, it just consumes the conversation.
Yeah, I know.
So there's,
oh, they want to know about me.
Yeah, but then there is this sense of compassion for folks, you know, about, you know, I always ask people, what do you think? And when they quote me a book, I think, oh, does that mean I should go read the book? But it's because I'm interested, and people are not used to that. Mm. And I really want to know what you think. Well, people aren't used to thinking, and I know it's a blanket statement, it sounds like such a prejudice, but I encounter this all the time. It's, if I ask you what you think, I'm asking what you think because you have a story, you have a unique view, an individual perception, and likely one I've never thought about, and I find that fascinating. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, there's such a, we've just come out of, you know, a few decades of me, 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 me. You said it right at the onset of the show, that competitive edge, that fearful edge, that get ahead and
people, that is fearful, yeah.
And, well, sure, and people always think they're not enough. So it's when you ask them about themselves, it's the surface stuff. Because they really, this is why, gee, meditations and, you know, all kinds of stuff like yoga and any kinds of therapies are so helpful to get to know the self, because people really do want to dig deep now. I believe this with all my heart. We have an awakening occurring. People are wanting to be self-aware, but they don't know how. Nobody has ever been interested enough, you know, in them to, it's a discomfort, you know. So, but you're right at the beginning. When I've asked people a lot of questions, they have no interest in me. I go, well, I guess that's enough of that conversation, and I move on because they're not learning from it. So there's always so much to learn from it because it's a two-way street, always a two-way street.
Mm-hmm. So some good suggestions, you know, and just to kind of start summing up what we've been talking about, we talked about compassion, empathy, being non-judgmental. That's, and that last one, non-judgmental, is something that a lot of us have to work on. If you grew up in a religion, you were probably taught to be very judgmental. I know I was. You know, if you're not part of our religion, where our God is bigger than your God, you're not going to make it. You know, you're going to die at Armageddon. You're going to go to hell and burn there forever, whatever. You know, it's being judgmental. And so we need to learn to accept everyone, you know, regardless, don't accept people for, accept them for who they are, not necessarily what they believe. I know it's connected, but if they're of a particular religious persuasion or political persuasion, you know, we accept them for who they are. If who they are causes harm, then we're not in a relationship with them. You know, and I've said this before, I don't care what people believe as long as they do no harm and as long as they do right, but especially do no harm. You know, it's more the passive thing, whereas doing right is the more active thing. So accept people for who they are, not necessarily what they believe. You may disagree with some of the different things, but that's okay as long as there's no harm being done there. So don't judge other people like that. You know, it's so easy to fall into. Some of us have to work constantly at it. You know, and I will be judgmental of people and religions who do harm. And I have been, and I won't stop that. Which kind of leads us into a little bit on righteous indignation. And that's a bit of a fine line to walk there, too. So you got to be careful with that righteous indignation, because it can also you kind of slip over the edge into being self-righteous. So if there are certain causes, like harm to children is one that I'll get righteously indignant on, harm to others, injustices toward others. But if you're like me, you got to work at being non-judgmental. So continue working on it. Continue trying to accept people, trying to understand, giving people the breaks that they need. And because we want them too, don't we? And so have that mindset, have that attitude, pay it forward. You know, doing nice for somebody, like tonight, tomorrow, can you just do a nice for somebody? And even if they don't know who it is, it doesn't matter. You know, pay it forward. All right.
You know, I was just going to throw in there, Doug, that I have to work on judgment in regards to prejudice about certain behaviors. And as soon as I see a certain behavior, it's part of me, and this is not so much in my work, but in my daily life and, you know, my private life and encountering folks. And if I see a certain attitude or a certain behavior, it's like the hair on the back of my neck stands up, and I just have to take a breath
mm-hmm.
and not react to that. And it's tough, you know, and I'm hearing what you're saying, that sometimes there's a double edge here
mm-hmm.
about when to speak up and when not to speak up. Without being indignant about it and taking each individual as an individual. Look, I'm not a fan of Christianity and religions, not by a long shot, but it's you have 100 people in a room who all happen to be of a Christian ilk. There's likely only one in there who's going to really pee me off.
Well, one out of 100 ain't bad.
Well, and likely because they suffer with that righteous indignation.
Or self-righteousness.
Yeah, and maybe there's more of them, but in my dynamic with people, it has nothing to do with their religion. It has to do with who they are. And if it's good and kind, what do I care what you believe? It's mm-hmm. just when you start to impose that belief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody says to me that I can't be good unless I believe what they believe, we get a problem. And the only problem we're really going to have is that I'm not going to have anything to do with you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess then it's not a problem, but it minimizes us. You know, we limit each other when we do have those kinds of, you know, judgments. And I'm always working on it. You know, it's my back.
Let's talk about that one, because I have this poem I'll read. This one, because we're talking about, look, everybody has their stuff. I don't care who you are. We all make mistakes. People have skeletons in the closet. You know, it just happens. And there's this poem that I'll read. It's called Saints and Sinners. This was published back in January 6, 1976 in Denver, Colorado, the Rocky Mountain News. It's was written by Mrs. Lena, I believe it's Uriosti, the wife of the New Mexico Union leader sent to prison back in that time. She handed a sheet of paper to a reporter when asked for her feelings about her husband's sentence. On the paper, she had written the following poem, Saints and Sinners, and I'll read it. She writes, "When some fellow yields to temptation and breaks a conventional law, we look for no good in his makeup, but God, how we look for a flaw. No one will ask, how was he tempted, nor allow for the battles he's fought. His name becomes food for the jackals, for us who have never been caught. He has sinned, we shout from the housetops. We forget the good he has done. We center on one lost battle and forget the ones he has won. Come, gaze on the sinner, we thunder, and by his example be taught that his footsteps lead to destruction, cry we who have never been caught. I am a sinner, O Lord, and I am weak, I blunder, I fall, I fail. I'm tossed on life's stormy ocean, like a ship embroiled in a gale. I'm willing to trust in thy mercy, to keep the commandments thou'st taught, but deliver me, Lord, from the judgment of saints who have never been caught." And that's pretty apropos for a lot of people. You know, they want to be judgmental, but, you know, as the old saying goes, when you point the finger, you got three of them pointing back at you. So we got to be careful on being judgmental.
Well, what happens, Doug, is that when somebody else has made a mistake, we want to crucify them so that nobody looks at ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, deferred attention.
You know, you said earlier about we've all got skeletons in our closets, and I was kind of chuckling to myself because I don't have skeletons in my closet. They're all over the floor, and I don't even have a closet anymore. Anything you want to know, I'll tell you.
And I was thinking the same thing when I said it, but, you know, most people do have skeletons. You know, and when you get to a certain point in your life, you just don't care anymore. Look, you know, I'm a WYSIWYG type of guy. What you see is what you get. You know, I don't have anything to hide. It doesn't mean I get on the rooftop and yell out my life and stuff. But you know what? I'm not ashamed. I'm not embarrassed. I'm not anything. It's just who I am. it's been part of my journey, part of my path. It's brought me to where I'm at here, and I make no bones about it. Do I make mistakes? Absolutely, except for when I don't. You know, I'm always right, except for when I'm wrong. I do everything perfectly, except for when I don't. You know, I'm a real live human being, and I will never apologize for being who I am or for being human, and that's a big part of this. So, as we close out this program tonight, we're getting real close to the end here, but not that end. But as we get to the end of our program here, you know, remember some of these points. Hopefully something's resonated with you. You've gotten a good point out of it here and there. Go and apply them in your life. You know, make this part of your own personal growth. You know, step it up a notch, because this is how we grow, folks. We pull each other up. We sharpen each other. And there's some good points in this program tonight. If you want to learn more about some of these types of things, some of the information that we shared tonight was taken directly from the IMHS degree program curriculum. So there's a lot more there. So if you're interested in really some powerful self-growth, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org and enroll in the degree program. If you'd just like to take a single course, a certification course, go to newageclass.com. That's our new auxiliary site designed for shorter classes, just single classes and certification courses. So take a look at that too. Thanks to John Hightower for screening our calls tonight. And we thank everybody for listening to the live program as well as the archive. Go ahead, Vicki, if you have some questions.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth, Doug, and thank everybody for joining us, and have a good week. We'll see you next week.
Have a great week, folks. Good night.